Chapter 13. Quinn. I had really good dreams after falling asleep in Cage's arms. I hadn't meant to fall asleep. As he was giving me the most incredible sexual experience of my life, I was thinking about how much I wanted to see my boyfriend naked. I wanted to touch another man's penis for the first time. But more than that, I wanted to feel that closeness with Cage. That didn't happen, of course, because his blowjob was too good. That's unfair to say. The truth was everything he had done was too good. I had never been kissed like that, or in any of those places. I was ready to blow so many times as his large hands moved over me. I considered it the achievement of my life that I didn't. I knew what I wanted next, though. I wanted to give him a fraction of the pleasure he had given me. I wanted him inside of me. I wanted the two of us to become one. I didn't care how, but if getting a blowjob could feel that good, the best thing I could do would probably be to give him one back. The thought of it sent a warm feeling rushing through me. What would it be like to hold his most intimate part in my hands? I wanted to find out. Feeling more awake by the moment, I made my plan. Maybe I would wake him up by wrapping my lips around his morning wood. That was a thing that non-virgins did, right? It had to be. No longer feeling his arms around me, I was about to open my eyes and go in search of his body when a knock on the door snapped me awake. Remembering where I was, my eyes popped open. I looked left and then found Cage on my right. He had popped his head up as well. Oh well. So much for waking him with a blowjob. And as I thought of a new plan, I heard rustling paper. I looked at the door. The sound was coming from a note being slipped underneath it. Feeling me move around, Cage looked over at me. "Morning," I told him with a smile. His tired eyes crinkled as it formed a smile in reply. "Morning. How did you sleep?" "Like a rock. How about you?" I was a little restless. It was because I didn't give you any relief, right? I fell asleep so hard. I was gonna give you a blowjob to wake you up. I had this whole plan. Cage chuckled. "That's okay. We have plenty of time for that." "We have right now," I said with a devilish smile. "We do, but aren't you curious to find out what someone slipped under our door?" He wasn't wrong. The intrigue of it screamed from the back of my mind. Never before had I felt more alive than I did unraveling the mystery behind Cage's past. Not only was it drawing on everything I'm good at, but it was something I was doing for Cage. Doing it for him made it 10 times more engaging. I was figuring out something that would change Cage's life forever. Something that he had been wondering about for a lifetime. If I could do this for him, it would be the best way to show how much I cared about him. So that meant, yes, I was far beyond a little curious about the note that was just slipped under our door. "I guess," I told him, not wanting him to think that I didn't want to put my hands all over him. "Me too. I would get it, but I'm a little limited," he said with a smile. "Right. I keep forgetting that you broke your leg." "So do I," he said with a chuckle. "Doesn't it hurt?" I said, about to get the note and then realizing I was naked and still hard as a rock. "I wasn't kidding when I said that it hurts less when I'm around you." "Do you think you're doing any more damage to it by walking on it?" "That's a good question, but I think my body would tell me if I needed to ease up. Last night when I was kneeling, looking at you, I didn't feel it at all. And this morning, it doesn't feel perfect, but I wouldn't say it hurts." "Maybe you're running on adrenaline? It can reduce pain," I suggested.
"Maybe, but until my body tells me to pull back, why not keep going?"
"Because you know you should rest?"
"I'll rest on Monday when we get back to school."
"Hopefully we'll be able to figure out something today," I told him.
"Hopefully."
Which makes me wonder, what's on the note? I would get out of bed and get it, but I'm naked and really hard, I admitted.
Is that supposed to be a bad thing? Cage said with a smile. I'm looking forward to the show.
Cage knew how to make me feel comfortable with anything. So, pulling off the covers, I scooted out of bed and stopped to give him a good look at my body.
God damn, you're sexy, he said, making me even harder.
When I turned, I bent over, giving him a full view of my butt and hole.
Are you trying to give me ideas?
I stood up and faced him. I was hoping you had the ideas already.
I can barely think of anything else.
It was good to hear. Without thinking if I should return to bed and collect my prize for the show, I unfolded the note and read it.
What does it say?
It says that Titus is downstairs whenever we're ready for the tour.
Titus?
Dr. Sonia had mentioned she got someone named Titus to give us a tour of the town. I guess he's here waiting for us. What time is it? We both looked around for a clock. When neither of us found one, I retrieved my phone from my jeans that lay crumpled at the foot of the bed.
My phone's dead, Cage said, looking at his.
I have a little juice left, and it is 11:05 a.m., I said, shocked.
Damn, I wonder how long he's been waiting.
I don't know, but did we confirm with Dr. Sonia that we wanted the tour?
Don't we want one, though?
Of course, I'm just saying, his waiting isn't our fault.
We should probably get down there, right?
Probably, I conceded.
Could you come here for a second, though?
I walked to his side of the bed.
A little closer.
I got close enough for him to take my hand. He didn't. Closer, he said with a devilish smile. I got as close to his head as I could get. That was when he took hold of my hard cock and wrapped his lips around it again. The sensation was coma-inducing. He wasted no time in working his tongue around my head and stroking me off. I was able to hold back last night, but I didn't have the strength this morning. I came in record speed. As I did, I placed my hand on his head to prevent myself from falling over.
That's all,
Cage said, rolling off of me with a big smile on his face. It took a moment for me to regain my bearings. I could have done that to you, I told him, seeing my wasted opportunity.
But I did it to you,
he said with a smile.
Staring at you all naked and hot, how was I not supposed to? Anyway, time for the tour,
he said, rolling out of bed, knowing he had won. I watched him, thinking about how unfair it was he had gotten to blow me twice while I still hadn't gotten to touch him. I had to figure out how to get my hands on him. And as he found his shirt and got dressed, he covered the humongous outline stretched across the front of his sweatpants. It looked like he was even bigger than I was.
Wow, I said, letting him know what I was thinking. See something you like?
Yes, very much so.
Maybe I'll give it to you later.
My erection, which was finally shrinking after being sucked off, suddenly changed direction. I never became as hard as I was before he blew me, but I was getting close.
Are you really getting hard again? Don't make me come over there, he said teasingly.
Is that supposed to be a threat? Because I really wasn't good at this flirting thing.
Never mind. We should go.
Cage chuckled.
Yeah, we should.
After we both got dressed, we took turns in the bathroom and then headed down. A guy was sitting on the couch in the living room. He was tall with shaggy brown hair, a welcoming face, and a big, beautiful smile. He looked like he could be 21 or 22. Whatever he was, he looked older than I was and like he could have been in Cage's year. Hi, he said, getting up and approaching us at the bottom of the stairs. His smile was beaming. Dr. Sonia called me up yesterday saying you two were looking to get a tour of our fair town. Yes, we wanted to learn more about it, I told him, taking the lead. I suppose you want to check out the falls?
That and other things, I said, looking back at Cage.
Are you guys ready to go, or do you need some time? Dr. Sonia packed us a little brunch since you missed breakfast. I imagine you two were a little busy this morning, Titus said suggestively.
I'm just kidding. No need to guess what two good-looking guys like yourselves were up to, he said with a knowing laugh.
Anyway, did you two want to head out? After all of that, I was stunned speechless. He had basically said that he knew we were having sex. As bad as I was with social things, I really didn't know how I was supposed to respond to that.
We're ready, Cage replied, jumping in. We're really looking forward to this. The falls are beautiful. They are snow-tipped, if you pardon the expression. It's what gave the town its name. Actually, a town board gave the town its name. They thought it would be better for tourism.
What do you think? Did it work? Was it the name that brought you two here?
No, we came because we thought I could have family here.
Well, the population isn't that big. Who are you looking for? Maybe I know them.
My last name is Rucker, but I don't think my parents would have the same name.
Yeah, I don't know any Ruckers.
Dr. Sonia said she'd ask around.
She's pretty good at that.
What do you think? Should we go?
I have the fixins right here, he said, bending down and picking up a wicker picnic basket.
Yeah, let's go.
Titus turned and led us outside.
I hope you don't mind if we take my truck. It seats three pretty comfortably.
No, that's fine.
What about you? Was it Cage or Quinn? Which one's which?
I'm Cage and this is Quinn.
What about you, Quinn? Do you mind sitting in the back seat? I would suggest that you sit up front with us. It's a bench seat, after all. But I figure you'll be more comfortable in the back.
The back is fine, I said, finding my voice.
All right, then. Let's head on out.
Titus drove us back into town, repeating some of the things we had already heard. The school used to be a moonshine warehouse. Glenn's general store used to be the chief moonshine runner's main office. And that there used to be a wall surrounding the town. From there, he made a U-turn and took us past the bed and breakfast. Alcohol prohibition ended in the late 1920s, didn't it? I asked, not having learned about this time in American history at my high school.
1933, Titus corrected. Between 1920 and 1933, this town was the richest little town in Tennessee. The amount of concentrated wealth rivaled that of Beverly Hills or downtown New York City.
Then what happened? Cage asked.
The same thing that happens to most ideas when their times have passed. People moved on and moved away. There were a few people who stayed. They kept the community going through the dry times. Not alcohol dry times. Those would probably be the wet times for that. But the people here did what they could. At one point, someone thought they could turn this place into a processing facility for Tennessee whiskey, but that didn't stick.
What changed?
Ecotourism, Titus explained. At least, that's what Dr. Sonia calls it. She said she came here because she thought it would be a beautiful place to settle down. We have more waterfalls than any part of Tennessee, and with hiking and rock climbing becoming all the rage, she convinced people to rename the town, focusing on that. She had said that the money would just roll in.
Has it worked? Cage asked.
It's tough to say. The population is up. Every so often we get folks like the two of you who show up looking to see the falls. But it's been tough getting us on the map.
Marketing a place like this must be hard, I considered.
No, I mean that it's been hard getting us on the map. The literal map. You pull out your phone and you couldn't find us if you wanted to. It has to do with the name change, I think. At least, that's what I've been told. And we're unincorporated. A lot of little things add up. But it's a beautiful town. A lot of friendly people. Very welcoming. People just need to hear about us. What I'm saying is, whenever you get back to where you came from, tell people.
he said with a broad smile.
We definitely will, Cage said enthusiastically. By the way, and you may be too young to know this, but have you ever heard of someone who might have died giving birth? It would have been around the time you were born.
My memories don't go that far back, Titus said with a quick smile.
Of course. What about any babies going missing?
You mean like kidnapped? Or baby-napped, I guess it would be in this case?
Yeah. No, never heard of anything like that around these parts. Is that who you're looking for?
We don't know, I said, jumping in. We suspect it was in a town close to Falls County Hospital.
Oh, I remember that place. I was born there. Of course, I don't remember being born, but that was where I had to go for anything medically related before Dr. Tom took up residence.
You've met Glenn, right?
That's what Dr. Sonia was saying.
We did. Nice guy. He gave us my crutches, which I have once again forgotten, Cage said, realizing it for the first time.
I noticed your bum leg there. What's that, a sporting injury? You look like you've played some ball.
Football injury.
I used to play football back in high school. We have a pretty good football program here. We don't get much of an opportunity to travel for games. Funds in this town are always a little tight, but it has potential. Do you play at East Tennessee?
I did. My season's over.
Sorry to hear that. I've always thought about going there.
Why don't you? I asked.
Money, time, motivation. Take your pick. I was thinking I could study something that I could bring back here.
That's a great idea, I said, appreciating his loyalty to the town.
It is, but then I got stuck on what that should be.
That's what university is for, to help you figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, you're right. I need to give it some more thought. Now that I have two friends who attend, might be worth considering, Titus said with another welcoming smile. Starting about 20 minutes out of town, we began our tour of the frozen waterfalls. No one had oversold them. They were amazing looking. They all looked like they were frozen midstream, creating icicles that were as much as 20 feet long.
My friends and I used to skinny dip out here when we were kids, Titus said as we stared at one of the falls from our parked truck.
When it wasn't frozen over, of course.
Yeah, as beautiful as it is in the winter, they are twice as beautiful in the summer. Maybe more. They're hidden gems.
You're right. I've never seen anything like it, I said.
Well, that's not saying much because you're from the city, Cage joked.
Oh, which city? Titus asked.
The Big Apple, Cage volunteered for me.
Wow, what was that like?
I froze, unsure how much I should say. My childhood couldn't be compared to anything someone who grew up here could have had. And did I mention that I had two dads and a mom? He seemed fine with Cage and me, but I couldn't forget how the busboy had reacted the night before.
It's different, I told him.
I bet it is. Are cars the only thing you hear?
Depends on where you are.
I can't even imagine that. Do you hear this?
It's the sweet sound of nothing.
You can't beat that.
I grew up a mile from our closest neighbor, Cage volunteered.
So, you two are the extremes, Titus said with a smile.
We definitely had different experiences growing up, Cage said.
We're not that different,
I corrected, not liking the distance he was putting between us.
Come on. I can't even imagine the world you grew up in, or what it feels like to be in your situation.
What situation is that? Titus asked innocently.
Cage and I looked at each other. It was good to know that he wasn't going to blurt out anything that might make me uncomfortable.
I grew up with a lot of pressure to do something special, I summarized.
You never told me that,
Cage said, searching his thoughts.
I thought I did when we spoke about stuff.
No, I remember that conversation very well. You didn't mention that.
I sighed. Well, I do. I can't just do anything I want with my life. I feel like everyone is expecting me to do something that changes the world.
To change the world? Titus said jovially. Wow, that's a bit of pressure.
More than a bit, I clarified.
So, how are you going to do it? What are your plans to change the world?
Titus replied. I have no idea. I thought I could figure it out on my own. Then I thought I could figure it out if I backpacked through Europe. Nope, I still don't know.
You backpacked through Europe? Titus asked, mystified.
Yeah.
Wow. You too? He said, turning to Cage. No, that wasn't really an option for me.
Cage was too busy sharpening his skills to play in the NFL.
You're going to play in the NFL?
Not anymore. That part of my life is over.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Really?
Titus said sympathetically. Don't be. It was never my dream.
What is your dream?
To get married. Have a family. Raise a couple of kids. Maybe I could teach football somewhere.
Cage said, looking at me. As nice as his dream sounded, I had to admit that it didn't fit with what I knew I had to do. For my parents and all of the families at my school, I needed to show the world that we aren't misfits and mistakes. I needed to stand out and change the world, making everyone grateful that kids who were born to two dads and a mom exist. I had to justify our existence. When I didn't respond, Titus broke the tension by mentioning the food Dr. Sonia had packed for us. She had made us fried egg sandwiches with melted cheese and ham between toasted English muffins. The flavor was enhanced with a tart jam that was mixed with honey.
They're good, Titus said, enjoying one of them. She doesn't cook often, but whenever she would bring something to a fair or school function, hers would always be the first I would check out. She's from the Caribbean, you know? Jamaica, I think. Her jerk chicken is to die for.
She's from Jamaica?
I'm from the Bahamas, I said, happy to hear that someone was from nearby.
I thought you said you were from New York City, Titus asked.
He spent his summers in the Bahamas, Cage explained.
Titus just stared at me in the rearview mirror after that. I couldn't tell what he was thinking, but I felt the road being paved for him to think I was the freak everyone saw me as.
Have we seen all of the falls? I said, wanting to change the topic.
Not even close. I've only been taking you to the ones that didn't require much walking.
You don't have to worry about me. I could walk a bit, Cage clarified.
You sure? Titus asked doubtfully.
I don't think I could do a 2-mile hike, but we could go further than we have.
All right then, let's get to it, Titus said, restarting his truck.
Titus drove for another 20 minutes and then parked the truck by the side of the road.
How far is the hike? I asked him.
About a 1/2 mile, maybe a little less.
Are you sure you're up for this?
We don't have to, I said, checking in with Cage.
I'm fine, really.
I didn't want to tell Cage he couldn't or shouldn't do it if he said he was fine. I had a hard time believing that someone who had an injury like this could hike a 1/2 mile on it. That seemed crazy. But I had to trust Cage. No one knew how he felt except him.
The hike to the river was a snowy wonderland. We got quite a bit of snow in New York, and Central Park was always nice in the winter. But I had never seen anything like this. The deeper we got into the woods, the more snow-covered the trees became. It was beautiful. I hadn't imagined that places like this existed in real life. The only sound I heard was the crunch of the snow under our feet. Past that, there was a light whirring as the breeze cut through the trees. It had to be one of the most relaxing experiences ever. I didn't know life could be so peaceful. With Titus leading, I continuously looked back at Cage to see how he was doing. He seemed fine, just as he said he would be. I wasn't sure how.
I'm sure it helped that there were no hills or uneven areas, but even with that, I was amazed by Cage. I knew that there was no way I could do what he was doing. It made me want to be with him even more.
"This is it," Titus said, leading us into a clearing.
I looked at the sight ahead of us. 40 feet away was a frozen lake that was 100 feet across. At the far end was a 30-foot-high rock face. Stretching from the top to the bottom of it were icicles. It looked like a curtain made of ice. It was incredible.
"Wow," I said, unable to wrap my mind around the beauty of it.
"This is amazing," Cage said, as blown away by it as I was.
"Come on, let me show you something,"
Titus said, ushering us forward. Titus approached the edge of the frozen lake with us in tow.
"Is this safe?" I asked, never having walked on ice before.
"Sure is. This has been frozen for the season. What you have to look out for is gray ice. When it's blue, it's solid. When it's snow-covered like this, you have to be careful, but for the most part, you're fine."
It reassured me that Titus knew so much about frozen lakes. It was probably something every kid growing up here knew. I couldn't imagine all the ways his upbringing was different than mine. Was Cage's upbringing more similar to Titus's?
All I knew about Cage when I met and fell for him was that he was a football star. Because of my uncle and the parents at my high school, I was very comfortable with professional athletes. But Cage was more than that. He was a guy who grew up in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by trees, and with a father who treated him like the only thing he was good for was football. That couldn't be further from my experiences. Of course, whose life could have been similar to mine? I guess the other kids at my school might have experienced something close. But could I only have a happy life with one of a handful of people, most of which were a generation younger than me? That didn't seem right to me. So, if not them, why not a guy who came from a completely different world, like Cage? I looked back at Cage, seeing if he disagreed with Titus's assessment of the ice. When he didn't react, I took what Titus said as fact. I followed Titus's footsteps onto the ice, and within a few feet, he looked back and corrected me.
"You never want to walk in a line on ice. Spread out. It reduces risk," he said.
I didn't see the logic in that, but I listened and stepped out of his cleared path. To me, Titus having walked on it was proof that the spot was strong enough to hold us. But he grew up here while I spent winters on a tropical island. What did I know? The further we got across the lake, the more I realized that the ice curtain in front of us wasn't a wall. It was a group of staggered icicles that appeared from a distance to be one piece. More amazing than that was the cave that was hidden behind it. It's a different experience in the summer when all of the water's flowing, but when everything is frozen like this, I think it's something special, Titus said, leading us through a gap in the icicles into the cave. Standing within and looking around its 10-foot depths, I was awestruck. The sight was hauntingly beautiful.
"It's like we're in one of those survival movies," I said, trying to wrap my head around what I was seeing.
"I could see that," Titus agreed.
"Could you imagine Hollywood coming here and shooting a movie? That would be something, wouldn't it?
Snowtip Falls has so much potential. All it needs is someone to recognize it and give us a chance."
"Maybe marketing could be something you study at university," I told him.
"You definitely have the personality for it. You're selling us on how great it is here."
"That's something worth considering," Titus said with a smile.
"I've never thought about that."
"You should listen to Quinn. He's pretty smart," Cage said, grabbing my attention.
It felt amazing to have a boyfriend who said nice things about me. How lucky was I? Everything I knew about him told me he was a great guy. I mean, he spent his free time playing flag football in the park with 10-year-olds. Who did stuff like that? I smiled at Cage and reached for his hand. He took it and smiled back at me. It wasn't a blushing smile. It was one that told me he was content. I liked seeing that. I always had so much running through my mind that it was hard to find peace. We sat in the cave and enjoyed the scenery for over an hour. Half of it was Titus answering my question about what it was like growing up here. He was a talker. That was fine, though, because he was easy to listen to. The way he described his childhood sounded a lot like mine, without the money and travel. It was attending a tiny school. You got to know your classmates really well when you did. You did everything together. The big difference between our experiences was that after graduation, the kids in my school could go their separate ways. They could meet new people and explore the world. Here, no one left town. If you didn't like someone in high school, you had to deal with them for the rest of your life. "It's getting late. You guys must be pretty hungry," Titus said, finally running out of things to say.
"We could head back," Cage said, checking in with me.
While we were sitting, he had pulled me into his arms. I could have stayed there forever. But the only thing we had to eat all day was Dr. Sonia's sandwiches. I was okay with that, but Cage was a much bigger guy than I was.
"Yeah, let's head back," I agreed.
But this was an incredible tour. The town is breathtaking.
"Thank you. I'm glad you liked it. Remember, tell people,"
Titus joked as he got up.
"Or you can tell them yourself when you start at East Tennessee next semester," I reminded him.
Titus laughed.
"Right, there's that."
With Titus again taking the lead, I kept hold of Cage's hand and followed the group. I kept wondering what it was like walking in Cage's shoes, so I did the next best thing. Finding his footprints in the snow, I matched our steps. Being nearly 6 inches taller than me, his steps were longer. I had to bounce a bit to keep up. Leaping forward to match his stride, I lost my footing and slid. Slipping out of Cage's hand, the ice came at me fast. I hit the ground with a crack. In a second, my body froze in shock. The crack I heard was the ice breaking. I was surrounded by cold water and sinking like a rock. I couldn't breathe. The water was too cold. My face was going under. It was all happening too fast. I started to panic. Losing which way was up, I waved my arms until my forehead hit something hard. It was the ice sheet. I had swum past where I had fallen in. It was so cold. My heart pounded uncontrollably. I was going to have to calm down. How could I, though? Everything in me screamed for me to take a breath. Forcing myself to slow down, I heard something. People were yelling. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but looking up, I could see their blurred images. One of them was pointing away from me. Was there something in the water he was warning me about? That was usually what that meant when something was pointing at something from a boat. No, that wasn't it. They wanted me to go back to where I fell in. They were pointing me toward the opening. Turning around, I forced my quickly freezing limbs to push me towards the hole in the ice. The shadows above got larger. Something entered the water in front of me. It was someone's hand. I had to grab for it. I wasn't in control of my angle or anything else, but clutching our palms, I was dragged toward the opening. With my free hand finding the edge of the ice, I pushed it out of the water and into the air. Twisting around, I grabbed onto the ice and pulled my head out. It was Cage who had my hand. He was lying on his belly, and he was pulling me out. Locked in the position, there wasn't much he could do once I got my head above water. So, after a deep breath, I did the rest.
"You have to kick your feet. Kick your feet," Titus insisted.
Without thinking, I did. It helped. What helped more was that I pulled on Cage's body and dragged myself up. It was then that I realized that the flatter my body was, the more I ascended when I kicked. Grabbing Cage's arm, then side, then pants, my body left the freezing water. Settling on the ice next to my rescuer, I was exhausted and traumatized, but I was alive and seemingly safe.
Cage, crawl back. Quinn, you have to roll away from the hole, Titus instructed us from a distance. We both did what we were told and were eventually on what felt like solid ice. Getting up, I just wanted to get off the lake. Crawling on my hands and knees, this time, I looked down at every step. When we were nearing the edge and my pulse no longer thumped in my ears, I stood up. Moving slowly and steadily, I made it back to shore. I was relieved and rattled. I looked around to gain my bearing and found Cage rushing towards me. Looking down at me, he gripped my arms. "Are you okay? You hurt?" That was a good question. Was I hurt? The sound of the crack as I hit the ice flashed through my mind. There was an ache in the back of my head where it had made contact. "I think so," I said, touching my head where it hit. "Let me see. Are you bleeding?" I removed my hand and looked at it. Cage moved around me to see for himself. "I don't think so. I think I'm good." "Jesus, Quinn," he said, looking me in the eyes and throwing his arms around me. "I'm okay," I assured him, not convinced that I was.
"Fuck, Titus, what the hell were you doing taking us on thin ice?" Cage yelled, turning to him.
"I'm sorry, I didn't think it was thin. It's been frozen all winter. Didn't I tell you not to walk in a line?" he said, yelling at me.
"Don't blame him.
I'm just saying, if he would have followed my instructions, nothing would have happened." "It's okay, Cage. It's not his fault." "He's right. He told me not to walk behind people, and I did. But everything ended okay. I just want to go."
"Can we go?"
Cage asked Titus angrily.
"Of course. Just follow me."
Titus led the way, and we were all quiet on the way back. The further we walked, the more I questioned if I was all right. I stopped to recenter myself. "What's the matter?"
"My head hurts," I admitted.
Cage looked at the back of my head again.
"You might have a concussion. Your head hit the ice pretty hard."
"I can take you to Dr. Tom and have you checked if you want."
"Yeah, that's probably best," Cage conceded.
"Dr. Tom, that's Glenn's husband, right?" I asked.
"Yeah,"
Titus confirmed. "We should see him," I said, thinking less about me and more about the reason we had come to Snowtip Falls. Continuing back to the truck, we got there with my teeth chattering. My wet clothes were freezing quickly.
"Let me turn on the heat. You might want to take off what's wet," Titus said, unlocking the truck.
"I can't move my arms. They're so cold," I told them, starting to feel numb.
"I'll help you. Here, sit up front next to the vents," Cage said, directing me to the front passenger door and taking off my jacket and shirt.
Bare back, I was as cold as I was in my frozen jacket. But when Cage slipped his jacket onto me, I was immediately enveloped in Cage's body heat. It felt so good.
"You're gonna want to take off your pants as well, just until they dry," Titus said with the truck running.
I looked at Cage for confirmation.
"Yeah, probably," he agreed.
I moved my hand to unbutton them, and I couldn't control my fingers enough to do it.
"Let me get that,"
Cage offered before moving his hand to my pants. I was too cold and uncomfortable to make much out of it, but having him undress me warmed me up. With my pants, shoes, and socks off, I climbed into the front seat of the truck. I moved to the middle of the bench, hoping Cage would join us. It wasn't just that I wanted to be able to snuggle up to him for his body heat. It was that I felt better when I was in his arms. I could use a little of that now. After he placed my wet clothes in front of a vent, he slid next to me, and we were off. His holding me was automatic. I cuddled up in his arms, grateful for having him there. I couldn't be sure if I fell asleep on the way back or not. I wasn't feeling perfect after hitting my head,
but I didn't feel nauseous. Nausea was the classic sign of a concussion, so at least I didn't have that. By the time we were making a right turn past Glenn's general store, I was, for the most part, feeling better. I wasn't going to tell either of them that. I wanted an excuse to talk to the town doctor alone. The place we pulled up to was two stories with white siding. If I were to picture the home of a small town doctor, it would have been like this. His office was a similar looking detached building to the left of the main house, but set further back. Putting my pants and shoes on, the chill from the water quickly returned. Having been blasted by the hot air in the truck, it didn't affect me quite as much. Even with there being a slight breeze, I made it to the office without my dick freezing off. I was happy about that. I had barely started using it for its intended purpose. I didn't want to lose it now.
Dr. Tom!
Titus called, bringing an older Latino man into the waiting room. He was more serious looking than his husband. He was also shaped differently. Whereas Glenn was built like a teddy bear, Dr. Tom was more barrel-chested. Both looked like they enjoyed a good meal, though. This had to be what years of marital bliss in a small town looked like.
Titus, what's up? Who's this?
The man said in a slight Spanish accent. I was giving them a tour of the falls, and Quinn fell through the ice. He hit his head on the way down, so I thought I would bring him so you could check him out.
Dr. Tom turned to me. Quinn, is it?
Yes.
Why don't you join me in my office?
He said, leading me back. Behind the closed door, the doctor pointed me to the metal bed in the middle of the room.
Have a seat. Let me take a look at you. Are you experiencing any nausea or headaches?
He asked, sitting in front of me and shining a light in my eyes.
No nausea. I had a bit of a headache, but it's almost gone now. Okay. What about any tingling in your extremities? Fingers? Toes?
He said, squeezing my fingers.
I was in the water for less than a minute. Cage rescued me pretty quickly. Cage, is that your friend outside?
Yes.
You two came to town to check out the frozen falls?
No, actually.
What brought you?
We're looking for Cage's parents.
Oh,
the doctor said, crossing his arms and leaning back.
What are their names?
We don't know. His mother is listed as Jane Doe on his birth certificate.
That's unusual.
That's what I thought.
But why are you looking for her here?
Because Cage's father, or at least the man who raised him, had an ID for Falls County Hospital. That made me think that he worked there around the time that Cage was born. If he wasn't his biological father, and he worked in the hospital, there was only one way to get a hold of a baby.
You're making a serious accusation there, and that still doesn't explain why you would come here.
We checked the hospital. It's shut down. Yes. I figured that if his mother was at that hospital, she probably came from close by. Your husband said that you used to work there?
Dr. Tom shifted uncomfortably. I did. It was a few years ago.
Were you there 22 years ago? The doctor instinctually reached for his speckled gray beard.
I was.
Did you hear about any children going missing or any mothers dying during birth? That was the story Cage's father told him. He said that his mother died.
What was your friend's father's name?
The ID said Joe Rucker. I watched for any response that came from hearing the name. He had none. There was no casual dismissal or confirmation. He was blank. Why didn't he have any reaction at all? If the name meant nothing to him, wouldn't he automatically brush it aside?
I see.
Did you know him?
I can't say that I did, he said, stone-faced.
Do you know of any situation that could put Cage's birth there?
You understand that I couldn't tell you even if I did. There's something called patient-doctor confidentiality.
Sure, I know. But if there was a kid that went missing, wouldn't someone be looking for them? The doctor just stared at me. Was his reaction supposed to be telling me something? Was I missing something that someone who was better at reading people would pick up on?
As much as I would like to help you, this isn't a topic I could discuss with someone who just showed up off of the street. Did you really fall into the ice?
I did. Why would I lie about that?
There are all types in this world.
Are you suggesting that there's something to what I've been saying?
I'm neither saying whether there is or isn't. It's not my place.
I stared at Dr. Tom, sure that he was looking for a follow-up question. It took me a moment to figure out what it was.
Then, whose place is it?
The doctor unlatched his arms and began paperwork as if I hadn't asked the question.
Have you gotten the chance to meet many people in town?
We've met a few.
Is there anyone we should meet?
I don't know if there's anyone you should meet, but there are some interesting characters. Nero is someone you might find entertaining. He's a little rough around the edges, but he's a good kid.
Nero?
Yes. Is there anything else medical related that I could help you with? He said, ushering me out.
No.
Thank you.
Who do I pay for the visit?
Don't worry about it. You had nothing wrong. It's on the house.
He said, looking at me with a forced smile. I was about to go when I thought of something.
Actually, there might be one other thing that I'd like to discuss.
What's that?
You're married?
Yes.
To a man?
Yes, the doctor said, worried about where I was going with my question.
I'm here with my boyfriend.
Okay.
We might be doing something for the first time later. I'm aware that there are things you can use to make such things a little easier. You know, when they slide in.
Dr. Tom turned, grabbed a small tube out of a cabinet, and handed it to me.
Thanks, I told him.
Nero, right?
The doctor gave me a tight-lipped smile.
I'll take that as a yes.
I left his office and joined the two guys.
Is everything okay?
Cage asked, concerned.
Oh, yeah. It's just a bump on the head. I'm fine.
Do you think he should take a look at your cast?
I don't see why he would,
Cage said flatly.
Because you just walked a mile on it?
It was broken, wasn't it?
I guess my dad was right. I heal fast.
I didn't want to argue with Cage about how he felt, so I dropped the topic and we all returned to Titus's truck. When we were back at the bed and breakfast, Titus made clear that he wasn't joining us.
I'm sorry it ended like that,
Titus said, genuinely disappointed.
Honestly, I'm fine. It's just something that happened.
By the way, do you know someone by the name of Nero?
Yeah, sure. What about him?
Where would we find him if we were looking?
I think he does a couple of shifts at the diner.
Wait, as a busboy?
Yeah. Why?
I looked at Cage, who was looking at me as curiously as Titus was.
I was just wondering.
Listen, thanks for showing us around. I pulled out my wallet and handed him 2 20s.
Oh, no, you don't have to, especially after what happened.
I'm telling you, it's fine. It was a great tour. We're grateful for it. I insist.
Well, if you insist,
he said, flashing his brilliant smile.
And if we need a little more history on the town, do you think we can give you a call?
Of course, just let me know.
Thanks. Have a good one,
I told him before ushering Cage out of the truck and inside.
Why were you asking about the busboy from last night?
He asked me as we crossed the living room.
How was your tour?
Dr. Sonia said, crossing from the kitchen.
It was a long one.
It was very nice. Thank you,
Cage said, relieving me of having to make polite conversation.
Did you see many of the falls?
We did. They were beautiful.
Oh, good. Glad you liked them.
On a related note, do you have any way of drying these wet clothes?
Cage asked, holding up my shirt and jacket, having collected them from Titus's truck.
Dr. Sonia reacted with playful surprise. So I assume the tour was eventful,
she joked. Both of us chuckled.
It was.
No one was hurt, right?
I'm fine, I told her.
Good, I can take care of these,
she said, taking my clothes from Cage. She next looked down at my pants.
Do you want to give me those?
I'm good, thanks.
Suit yourself. Callie and I are about to have dinner. Would you like to join us?
Thank you, but we have plans, I said, interjecting. Cage looked at me confused. He was probably pretty hungry by now, so I was taking food out of the wolf's mouth.
Yes, unfortunately, we have plans, Cage confirmed.
Oh? What are you two up to?
Cage said, looking at me.
Boyfriend stuff, I said.
Dr. Sonia fought a laugh.
Go to it,
she said, walking away without another word. Cage turned to me.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, but I really need to get something to eat first.
We are. We're just going to get it at the diner. I explained to Cage what Dr. Tom had said to me and what I thought it meant.
So you think that little homophobe has information that could help us?
That's what he implied.
I'm sure he'll be in the sharing mood after we got him docked a day's pay.
We didn't do anything to him. He was the one who said something to us.
And I'm sure he'll see it that way.
Sarcasm? I confirmed.
Yes, sarcasm. He's not going to want to talk to us, and I'm not sure I'm going to want to talk to him.
Then I'll do the talking.
I don't think he's going to want to talk to you either.
Let's hope he does, because I think he might have the answers to what happened to your mother. Cage didn't fight me after that. Taking a few minutes to rest in our room, we headed to Cage's truck and returned to the diner. Entering, it wasn't as empty as the night before. There was a graying couple at one of the tables and a balding, creepy-looking man sitting in the corner picking at his food with his fingers.
I'll be right with you,
the stout cook said from the kitchen. We took our previous booth and sat scanning for signs of the busboy. Neither of us saw any. The cook appeared to be doing everything by himself. And when he handed us our menus, he added,
Tonight we're out of everything but the chicken dinner, the burger, hot dogs, and I have some pie left.
I'll take the chicken dinner, Cage said, not looking at the menu.
Fried or baked?
Baked.
Fries or mashed potatoes?
Mashed potatoes.
And a Coke.
I'll get the same with fries, thanks, I told him.
The man took our menus and got us our Cokes. After, he went to the kitchen and started preparing everything.
Why give us the menus if he's out of half of what's on it? Cage asked me with a smile.
Habit? I said, wondering the same thing.
I guess. Although it looks like this place has been here a while, and it's the only option in town. I don't think anyone else here needs the menu to know what they want,
Cage pointed out.
True, I agreed. I don't know.
By the way, how are you feeling?
Cage asked, squinting his eyes at me.
I'm okay, but I'm still a little cold.
Really? Cage asked, reaching across the table. I grunted my reluctance to hold hands here after what had happened the night before.
No, I won't let you get self-conscious about us showing affection in public. If I was with a girl, no one would think about it. I'm not going to act differently because you're a guy.
I relaxed my crossed arms and he took my hands.
Quinn, I'm proud to be with you. I want everyone here to know that I got you and they didn't. If they have a problem with the fact that we're two guys, then they could meet me outside. But I won't let it change us. I'll fight for that,
he said, lifting my hands to his lips and kissing them. My heart thumped hearing his declaration. How could he be so confident being with me? My dads had been together for 20 years and had been best friends for a decade before that. Yet, even they acted differently when they were together in public compared to when they were with my mom. When my dads were at events without my mom, they barely did more than put their arms around the other's shoulders. But when either was with my mom, they held hands with her, kissed her, they did whatever. How was Cage, a guy who had only dated women until me,
more comfortable showing his affection in public than two men who had been madly in love with each other for 20 years. Although I couldn't explain it, knowing the difference made Cage that much more irresistible. He was everything I could ever want in a guy. Being with him didn't change my history or what I knew I had to accomplish with my life. But maybe there was a way to have both. Was he really only interested in settling down somewhere and raising a family? I mean, that sounded incredible. And the idea of creating a family with him felt wonderful and right. But I couldn't have a small private life. It was my responsibility to prove that kids from my type of family could change the world. I couldn't do that living in a place as isolated as Snowtip Falls. Pushing that out of my mind, I focused on something more immediate. "I don't think Nero is here tonight," I told Cage.
"I don't think so either."
"What do we do?"
"What do you mean?"
"Tomorrow's Monday. We have class in the morning," I pointed out.
"Did you want to head back?"
"Shouldn't we? Don't you have to work?"
"I can find someone to cover my shifts."
"Don't you need to work? We could always come back next weekend." Cage looked away, saddened.
"You're right, like always."
It was just that answers were finally starting to feel close. "What do you think Nero knows?"
"I can't even guess. It could be anything. But he's not here, and we don't know if he'll be back tomorrow or ever."
"You're right. We should go. After we eat, of course," he said firmly.
"Of course," I said with a chuckle.
"I think I've starved you enough for one day." I stared into his eyes, losing myself. I had to touch him. So, freeing one of my hands, I brushed his cheek with my thumb. He was so gorgeous and perfect. I wanted to be his. I wanted the two of us to be one. When dinner came, we ate, Cage a little faster than I did. The big guy barely had anything to eat all day.
"Interested in a little pie?" the cook asked when he cleared our plates.
Cage looked at me, clearly wanting to say yes.
"Sure. What type?"
I asked.
"It's blueberry. Two slices or one?"
"Just one. I only need a bite," I told Cage.
"Just one, thanks," Cage told the cook. "You want it warmed up?"
Cage looked at me, and I nodded.
"Sure." "Ice cream on the side?"
"Absolutely," Cage said, not needing to consult with me. The cook brought out the steaming hot pie with two forks, and we ate it in silence. I wasn't talking because all I could think about was climbing into his arms naked. I had seen the outline of his manhood. He was big. What would that feel like pushing into me? Dr. Tom had given me lube. It was what I was hinting at. I could only imagine him smearing it between my ass cheeks and massaging my hole with it. Would he push a finger in to open me up first? I got hard thinking about it. It had to happen at some point, right? Maybe I'll stay over at his place tonight. Maybe he'll walk me to my room when we get back to the university and then follow me in. My skin crackled in anticipation. I felt like I was going crazy waiting for it.
"Should we go?"
Cage asked when the pie was gone.
"Okay,"
I said with a smile, still thinking about what could happen next. I went to the cash register and paid the bill, and then joined Cage as he walked towards the door. He reached for my hand, and I slipped it in his. It felt so right. We were about to let each other go and climb into the truck when someone drew our attention.
"Guys!"
We turned, seeing Titus. He was with a woman who looked like an older, female version of himself. She, however, looked like she took life more seriously than he did.
"Titus,"
Cage said, gripping my hand, making sure I didn't shy away from his grasp. Titus led the woman over and genuinely looked happy to see us.
"Cage, Quinn, this is my mom. Mom, these are the two guys I gave a tour to today."
"Nice to meet you," we both said.
"Nice to meet you. Titus hasn't been able to stop talking about you two. He tells me he's going to East Tennessee University now."
We looked at Titus, who turned red.
Come on, Mom. I just mentioned that I gave them a tour and said I was going to look into attending some classes. Quinn was telling me how it might be able to help the town. The town is perfect just the way it is, his mother said firmly. I don't know why you think things would be better if we were overrun by tourists. She looked at us. No offense.
No offense taken, Cage said politely.
We're hardly going to be overrun by tourists. I just think the town would do better if we had a little more money flowing through it.
Your generation and your focus on money.
Titus laughed. I hardly think wanting to be successful started with my generation. Have you heard of the Industrial Revolution? Robber barons? I think people have been wanting more for their lives before I came along. His mother huffed. Titus looked at us and shrugged, his shoulders confounded but amused. Anyhow, did you two just have dinner?
Cage replied, Yeah, we had the chicken.
It's Sunday, so it's what's on the menu. And another thing, Mom, if we had more people coming through the town, maybe Bill could have more than one option on Sundays.
I've never heard you complain about his Sunday meals.
Well, consider this me registering my complaint.
Noted,
his mother said, displeased. Anyway, you guys headed back to the bed and breakfast?
Yeah, and then we're driving back, Cage explained.
Oh, because I was going to tell you that I know where to find Nero tomorrow if you're still looking for him.
You do? I asked, perking up.
Yeah. Titus looked at his mother, who was watching us talk. He has this thing he hosts on Monday nights. It's just a little social club event, nothing special. But I was going to say that I could take you if you wanted to go.
Oh, Cage said, looking at me. I didn't know what to say to him. I was as interested in talking to Nero as he was, maybe more. But we both had classes and he had to work.
Can we get your number and text you about it? I said, knowing Cage and I had to consider this.
Sure,
Titus said before we exchanged numbers and went our separate ways. In the warmth of the truck, we watched Titus go inside and settle at a table with his mother. His mom smiled for the first time when the cook came to the table. They were both smiling. There was clearly something more going on between the two.
So, what do you think? Do we stick around and try to talk to Nero at his social club event tomorrow?
Cage asked, turning to me.
We could always drive home and come back tomorrow after you get off of work.
We could, but that's 2 hours there, 2 hours back here, and then two more hours getting home.
I could think of a few better ways to spend our time, he said with a smile.
I got hard as soon as he said it.
He was right. I could think of several better things we could do with our time as well.
It's up to you, Quinn. It's your money. But if you wanted to stay another night, I might be able to make it worth your while,
he said, sending tingles whipping through my body.
Oh yeah? How?
Cage slipped his hand behind my neck and pulled my lips to his. I was weak in his grasp. The heat of his lips melted any resistance I had about staying. With his undulating on mine, I parted my lips and invited in his tongue. As our tongues danced, my head swooned. His kiss was a warm breeze on a cool day. Everything felt so good. And when he released me from my trance, I was willing to do anything to start it up again.
I think that would be worth staying over for, I told him, doing my best not to climb on top of him right there.
Cage smiled.
Good, I'm glad you think so, he said with a sparkle in his eyes. I couldn't not touch him as we drove back to the bed and breakfast. I slipped my hand onto his thigh, rubbing his muscles. Everything about him was so big. It didn't take me long to move my hand up his leg to his crotch. His cock was the first thing I touched. I couldn't avoid it. The thing was huge. His sweatpants didn't hide anything. I couldn't wait any longer. I had to see it. I needed to hold him in my hands. So, as he drove, I leaned over into his lap, gripped the band of his pants, and tugged them down. Cage helped me by shifting up, allowing his pants and underwear to slide to his thigh.
His cock was so big that it caught as his pants went down. His thick shaft was the first thing I saw. But having to slide my hand onto it and help it along, I got a full look at it as it sprung out inches from my lips. I had never held a dick before, and the feeling sent my heart racing. I couldn't encircle it with one hand. The most I could do was hold it still while I lowered my head and slipped the tip of it into my mouth. He groaned as soon as my hot breath encased him. I had never done this before, but I was a fast learner. I knew what he had done that had driven me wild, and sending my tongue to work on the ridge of his tip, I felt the truck slow down. Putting the truck in park, but not turning it off, he stretched out his legs, giving me easier access. As he did, he revealed some of his buried length. Wow. Wrapping a second hand under the first one, there was still space for a third. Feeling his bulging veins pressing against my palms, I pushed the tip of him as far into my throat as I could. It wasn't very far. Turned on as much as he was, I twisted my head, pulling it back before returning it to the boundaries of my throat. As I did, I stroked him with both hands. His legs squirmed. When he placed his hand on my head, I knew he was close. "Ah!" he moaned, shifting in his seat. Hearing that, I did more. Slapping my tongue back and forth across his head, I tightened my grip on his cock. Gliding across the curve of it, I finally flicked my tongue against the base of his head, causing him to explode. Not removing it from within me, I caught all of it in my throat. I didn't know if he would want me to or not, but I wanted to know everything about him. I wanted to know what Cage's cum tasted like. Swallowing all of it, it was tangy. He was silent as it kept coming. When it stopped was when he fought to catch his breath and inhaled. "Oh my God, you're so good at that. How did you get so good?" he asked, inspiring me to sit up and release him. I didn't want to let go of his sturdy manhood. I could have held onto it forever. It was thicker and more impressive than the truck's gear shifter, which was a foot away. I couldn't get over that I was looking at Cage's cock. It was my boyfriend's dick, and it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. He reached over and perched my chin on his finger. Leaning forward, he kissed my lips. "Seriously, how are you so good at that?" "I guess I was inspired," I told him, proud that I'd been able to bring him so much joy. Cage lowered his head and laid back.
"I don't think I can move. Seriously, I think my legs are paralyzed," he joked. "I may never be able to walk again."
"Oh no, your football career," Cage laughed.
"That's what I'll do. I'll blame my quitting on my boyfriend's blowjobs. They were so good that I lost the use of my legs. I'm sure sports media would understand that."
"I would," I confirmed with a smile. We both sat quietly as Cage gathered his strength. We were less than 20 seconds from the B&B coming into view. Finishing the final drive there, we parked out front and slowly made our way inside. I was still wearing Cage's jacket, so he crossed his arms trying to escape the cold. Entering, we looked around hoping we wouldn't have to talk to anyone about where we were. No one was there. Instead, we found my clothes folded on the living room coffee table in front of us. Hanging beside it was my jacket. Pinned to it was a note.
"I didn't know if you were going to stay another night. So either it was great meeting you and I hope to see you again, or I'll see you for breakfast in the morning."
"We should leave a note telling her that we're staying, shouldn't we?" I asked, unsure of what was expected.
"Either that or she'll just see my truck."
I looked out the window to see the truck illuminated by the living room lights.
"I guess you're right, and she has my credit card number. There's no need to leave a note."
Grabbing my clothes, we headed upstairs and retreated to our room. The bed had been made. I couldn't wait to mess it up again.
"I think I need a shower,"
Cage said, looking very relaxed.
"Should I join you?"
I asked, wondering if it was part of my boy-friendly duties.
No, with this thing, it's more work than play, he said, referring to his cast. Then I could wash your back for you.
Thanks, but I got it. Did you want to hit the shower first? I'll probably be a while.
I guess, I said, still wanting to wrap my hands around him. But instead, I grabbed my folded shirt and entered the bathroom, closing the door behind me. Stripping down, I couldn't stop thinking about how Cage's hard cock felt in my hands. I was starting to think that I would never touch a cock other than mine, and for it to be Cage's, I vibrated with excitement. There wasn't a moment when I was in the shower that I wasn't completely hard. I was so aroused I felt giddy. After getting out, I considered putting my clothes back on, but what was the point? Instead, I wrapped a towel around my waist and rejoined Cage.
God, I can't stop looking at you, he said, washing his eyes over me.
His attention caused my hard dick to twitch. He saw it and smiled.
I'll be back, he said, replacing me behind the bathroom door.
I didn't know what to do with myself while waiting. Although it wasn't cold in the room, it wasn't warm enough for me to sit around naked. That was a problem because I didn't want to get dressed. On top of that, I didn't know how long Cage would take. The best option had to be to get comfortable under the covers. I desperately wanted him to think of sex with me, though. So, what could I do to accomplish that? What I decided was I would put the tube of lube that Dr. Tom gave me on the bedside nightstand closest to the bathroom and get into the other side of the bed. To make sure he wouldn't miss it, I turned off all of the other lights except the bedside lamp that featured the lube like a spotlight. If he still missed it after that, I would say something. I wanted him so badly that I was shivering with anticipation. I slipped my hand under the sheets and pressed my dick when the pressure within got too much. The minutes felt like hours waiting for him to come out. I was sure I was about to snap in two from the tension when, to my relief, I heard the shower turn off and he returned to the bedroom. He approached the bed like a man out of the shadows. The way the towel rode his hip looked way better than the way it rode mine. His tapered naked torso resembled that of superheroes in movies. I could see every ripple of his bulging muscles. But there was only one bulge I cared about. That one didn't disappoint. His hard cock stretched across the front of him, eventually being buried in the ripples from the towel's tuck. I couldn't wait to feel it again. When he approached the edge of the bed and looked down at the nightstand, he chuckled. I was pretty sure his laugh meant I would see it soon.
Did you bring this with you?
He asked, picking up the lube and examining it. No, I got it from the doctor.
You're always one step ahead of everyone else.
I was curious what he meant by that, but didn't want to break the mood. Have you ever used lube before? I asked him, knowing that I hadn't.
Once or twice. Not like how we're going to use it, though. I can't wait to try that.
Me neither, I told him, wanting him to get into bed immediately. Dropping his towel, allowing his hard cock to spring out, Cage returned the little bottle to the nightstand and joined me under the sheets. I pressed my forearms against my chest and slid to him face first. With his arms easing around me, I drank in his body heat.
How do we do this? Cage asked.
However you'd like, I said, shaking.
You're cold, he said, pulling me tighter.
I loved being in his arms. The sensation made me drunk. Needing to kiss him, I pulled back my head, looking up at him. He had been waiting for that because as soon as I did, he leaned down and met my lips. Facing him, our hard cocks touched. We both felt it. When he suddenly kissed me harder, I knew that it had turned him on as much as it did me. Without thinking, I tilted my hips, rubbing his cock against my belly and mine against his leg. Quickly,
He started to do the same. I had never imagined how good doing this could feel. And when he moved his hand to my ass and sunk his fingers between my cheeks to pull my body closer, my hips moved uncontrollably. I wanted him to fuck me. I needed him to know that I did. Briefly letting go of my ass cheek, Cage reached back, retrieving something from behind him. I would have barely noticed if I hadn't heard a snap and a blurping sound that got me excited. And when his hands returned and his fingers tested my hole, I lifted my leg, giving him full access. Cage kissed me as his lube-covered fingers pushed into me. The pressure was almost too much. It caused me to stop kissing and groan. Responding, he pulled his finger away. Quickly returning his fingers to his target, he pulsed the pressure until, like a balloon, my hole popped. Cage's thick finger was inside of me. Cage was inside of me. With it came a flash of pain that quickly retreated. The sensation became fantastic. Moving to again kiss him, he then slowly fucked me with his finger before adding another one and stretching open my hole. Cage's fingers felt glorious, but there was something I wanted even more. So, hoping he wouldn't get the wrong impression, I pulled away from his lips. Rolling over, he didn't remove his fingers until I had completely turned around. With them out, I pushed my back onto his chest and found his cock with my ass cheeks. I knew I couldn't just lay there now that I knew how it felt to have him inside me, so I rubbed my ass against him. When he didn't move, I lifted my hips, sending my opening in search of his tip. With his head between my flesh, pushing above my hole, he took over. Moving his tip to my target, he clutched the side of my hip. All I could do was take a breath, preparing to receive what I had dreamed about for so long. Unlike his fingers, the head of his cock was overwhelming. As much as he had stretched me, when he thrust forward, I realized that it hadn't been enough. He kept testing me, pushing himself harder. Each time I flinched and then quickly relaxed, I could tell he was getting further with every pulse. Finally, when Cage gripped his large hand around my side and locked me into place, he pushed his cock, unwilling to relent. As much as it ached, I didn't want him to stop. Did it hurt, or did it feel good? I couldn't tell. What I did know was that I wanted Cage's cock in me. And then, as if I had been reborn, he popped in, sending a wave of agony that was quickly followed by a sea of pleasure. "Yes," I moaned, needing more. As soon as I said it, he pushed harder. "Ugh," I groaned. He was too much, but I wanted more. I wanted him to keep pushing until the two of us were one. Eventually, he hit a point when he couldn't go in any further. That was when he retreated and then thrust back in. His cock was strumming me like a fiddle. As he did, my sight went dark and my legs fell limp. If I were given 100 years, I would still never have imagined how good Cage's cock felt. My head was spinning. He was fucking me. Cage Rucker's cock was inside of me. And as he thrust into me faster and harder, I felt a knot building on the inside of my thigh that slowly crawled to my balls. I was coming from his fucking alone. How was this possible? I hadn't touched myself. Neither had Cage. Yet, my balls tingled and I felt a growing ache. I clenched my jaw, hoping I could do something to stop it. I couldn't. So, losing control of myself, my toes clenched, my muscles clamped, and I exploded into orgasm. I grunted as I did, but that was drowned out as Cage moaned. He moaned louder than I had ever heard anyone in my life. We were coming together. I moved my hand on top of his as it dug into my hip. I was growing lightheaded. I wanted to stay with him, experiencing every moment, but everything was too much. His cock, the way I felt about him,
The events of the day, it was all coming to a head. As it did, I took a final deep breath. Releasing it, my vision darkened. I was in the throes of the greatest feeling of my life and losing myself in it. I slowly blacked out.